as big and bad as the FBI is. You know, I figure as big and bad they are with all this thing, they would pick him up overnight, you know. And Rap Brown, Pat, who they know they couldn't pick up.
Mr. Carmichael, my first comment is a historical correction. The blacks did not build the pyramids, the Jews did.
The Jews?
That's
I beg your pardon?
The blacks did not build the pyramids, the Jews did. That's comment number one.
Okay.
That's right, Jewish labor under Egyptian slave masters.
Continue.
My second comment.
Wouldn't have filled them without slavery either.
Continue,
please.
My
second comment.
We let him state it. You want to help him? Come. You can help him.
My comment number two.
Let your brother continue.
Comment number two. If you believe that the Zionists control and exploit the people in this country, then you're an anti-Semite, even though you deny it in your book, Stokely Speaks.
Okay. Let's take your...
Comment number three.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's too bad that you align yourself against the national liberation movement of the Jewish people, Zionism, because by doing that, you align the black people against the Jewish people. They each have national liberation movements, and to align them against each other just... is calling for future conflict between them.
Okay, let's go to number one. You say the Jews built the pyramids.
That's right.
Does Africa belong to the Jews or to the Africans?
I'm sorry?
Does Africa belong to the Jews or to the Africans?
To Africa.
Thank you. Next question.
They built the pyramids, though.
Don't grab it.
There's no need to discuss that. Africa is my house.
Yeah,
so whatever is built in my house is mine, isn't it?
Fine, but it was built by Jews, talking about
but
the pyramids.
Look here, even if the Jews built it, who gave them the plans since they were slave laborers?
Come
to
it. Plans?
Yeah, who gave
Nobody
them the
gave
plans?
Nobody gave them any plans. Somebody told them to do it with whips.
Right, somebody told them how to do it with whips.
The Egyptians, the people
I wasn't talking
you
about
support
the slave labor.
Israelis.
I was talking about the mighty planning of the pyramids. Did the Africans do that?
Well, then the owner of the factory made the shirts, not the workers, right?
Yeah, understood that. Understood. No. Understood.
Hold on.
Continue.
Okay.
You should come to the microphone. You're very... But you're impolite. Oh, come on. Yet you're being impolite. That's a Zionist tactic. Come to the microphone. Let's discuss it. Come. No, I carry it.
My second comment was referring to your statements about Zionists exploiting people in this country.
Correct. I said the
Zionist. In your book, Stokely Speaks,
Zionism
must be eradicated wherever it's found, in the Middle East or in the ghettos of the United States.
Correct.
That's typical Hitlerian propaganda.
Typical what kind?
Hitlerian, Hitler, Adolf Hitler, a German, a Nazi.
Oh, I ain't afraid of that. Yeah, I understand. Look here.
That's German propaganda.
I understand. Let me tell you a tactic of Zionism. What they do is that every time you say something, they bring out Hitler. You understand? And they make you feel scared about Hitler. Okay, if Hitler killed as many Jews as he did, then what the Jews should do is take Germany. Why you go to Palestine? The Arabs ain't did nothing to you. Number one. Go to Germany.
Germany. Because Germany is not our homeland. Israel is.
I'm coming. Egypt is mine. It's Africa. Is that correct?
That's right.
Why does Israel want to attack
Israel
Africa?
Does not want Egypt.
Israel doesn't want Egypt.
No, it does not.
What does it want?
Israel wants Israel.
Where is Israel? What year was Israel recreated? How did you get it? How? Who gave it to you? Lord Balfour in London in 1916? Was it his?
The modern state of Israel was created by the United Nations.
You want to get in on this?
He's right.
Yeah.
Okay, absolutely correct. He is absolutely correct. And that shows you what an illegal, immoral, and unjust state is. Today, it won't even listen to the rules of the United Nations, which tells it to withdraw from the 1967 borders.
That's very interesting, Mr. Carmichael.
Let's work with it.
United Nations is a bunch of bullshit. And you know it.
Hey.
On one hand, you say that...
Please, wait, hold it. No, please. For respect of me, I don't curse publicly. I didn't go through that period. I left it where it belongs.
I said it. He didn't. The same roots and the same rights that blacks have to Africa are the same rights that Jews have to Israel. They've been living in exile does not mean we've relinquished the right. We still cherish it in our hearts.
I understand that.
So don't go off calling us aggressors, because we have a right to that land, just as blacks have a right to Africa.
I understand. I'm saying that Africa belongs to us. You say it belongs to you, too.
So no, I don't.
Two spaces.
I say Africa is yours, but Israel is ours.
No.
There's a difference.
No.
Yes, there is.
Israel belongs to the Palestinians.
For someone who believes in humanity, you certainly haven't shown it to me here.
I do believe in humanity.
Only black humanity.
I believe, but that's humanity.
Hey. What about Jewish?
Hey.
No, if you're going to go that way, Stokely, then it's yellow humanity.
Hey, come on.
Are blacks the only people in the world?
No, we're not the only people in the world.
Are Jews a people?
Huh?
Are Jews a people?
They call themselves a people, yes.
They are a people.
Well, you wait in line. I've been waiting here.
Let me say
I've
something.
I've been waiting in line,
let
man.
Let me say this. Let me say something here.
Hold on.
Wait a minute. Hold it now. Wasn't it in June the 12th, 1948 that they made the Exodus from Europe? Was that it?
That's when the United Nations gave it to them. But Israel was signed to them in 1917 by Lord Balfour of the English-British government.
Okay.
The Arabs had the land, and he signed a piece of paper and gave it to them.
Okay. Uh-huh. Now, what is the definition of Jewish?
Well, I said Zionist. That's them.
Because the reason why I'm trying to figure out, now, Israel is in the Middle East, right, or Jerusalem?
That's where they created it, yeah.
Okay. And the people that Exodus there, they came from Europe.
I hear you.
Were they Germans and Polacks and things like that?
Yes.
Now, so came from Yemen, Morocco, Iraq, Egypt, Jordan.
Hey, man, I'm on the mic. People are going to think I'm saying this shit.
No, I'm saying
I hear you. I hear you. Okay. I'm sorry. Wait. Please, let me just finish his last question on the question of anti-Semitic. Now, when he says I'm anti-Semitic, I'm supposed to jump back and say, hey, no, I'm not that. But in the first place, his definition is correct. As I understand it, the Arabs are also a Semite people, and I support the just claims of the Palestinian people to their land. Thus, I am pro-Semitic. I'm pro-Semitic.
Anti-Semitic has never meant anti-Arab. It's always meant anti-Jewish. And
you make
it
mean that, but you should have heard my speech in 1968. I said the power to define will be our
Mr.
right,
Carmichael.
That self-determination.
You are anti-Jewish. You're an anti-Semite.
Hey, I'm anti-Zionist. I'll tell you what I am.
Anti-Zionist.
I'm anti-Zionist. I'll tell you what I am.
Just speaking for 10 minutes.
Hey, Stokely, let's talk about something else
hold
now.
Hold it, everybody, just a second. We're out of time here. We're a little bit over. And so we're going to have to end it here. And we're moving it to the reception in the men's lounge. We can continue discussing.
Good evening. My guest obviously doesn't need much of an introduction. Suffice it to say that when you say the words black power, his image immediately comes to mind. Or, for that matter, if you remember the words, hell no, we won't go, from the Vietnam War era, you'll also remember him. But there always was and still is much more to Kwame Ture than that. So now you'll renew your relationship with Kwame Ture, as I will mine. Good to have you aboard.
My brother, it's good to be here.
Many people do not know how long ago you changed your name. It's been more than 10 years.
At least it was in the middle 70s, exactly. Yes.
That you took the name Kwame Ture. They also may not be familiar with the fact that you live in Conakry, Guinea, and may not know what you do there. Do you talk about that?
I have been living there since 1969, and just working to do the best we can to organize our people so that Africa can be unified.
You have, in more recent years, been affiliated with the All African People's Revolutionary Party. Are you still affiliated?
I am still affiliated with the All African People's Revolutionary Party, which was founded by Kwame Nkrumah, whose objective is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism, and whose ideology is Nkrumism, Tureism. And I shall stay with this party for a while.
What are you now doing in the United States?
We are now doing recruitment drives in the United States. Party and recruiting people who are conscious, those who seriously want to work for their people, not talk about working for their people, those who truly want to transform their wish for the people's unity into concrete reality by hard work. So our party is doing a recruitment drive. We go around the college campuses and try to recruit students who are serious to come and work for their people.
This is a particularly important time for you to be in the United States because the United States is at war. And the last time the United States was involved in a major war, the Vietnam War, yours was one of the loudest voices in protest against that war. And many people felt that maybe black people did not participate enough in that anti-war movement. However, in the new anti-war movement as a result of the Persian Gulf War, black people seem to be in it earlier and in much larger numbers than they ever were during the Vietnam War. To what do you attribute that?
Well, in the first place, I'm not quite sure, because during the Vietnam War, the African participation was clear in political direction. The most radical elements were by the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, but hell no, we won't go, seeking to destroy the draft to weaken American imperialism, which was effectively done. And in terms of the liberal movement, the moral determination was ensured by Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. So the African masses gave proper and correct direction to the anti-war movement. Of course, it is to be understood that in this time around, with the experience that we've had during the Vietnam War, we will play even more crucial roles in this struggle than we did in the previous struggle. And here, our struggle will be more to stop the spontaneity, to transform the peace movement from reacting to American invasions to aggressively going against American capitalism. The anti-war movement will be transformed through the participation of the African masses into an anti-capitalist and anti-Zionist movement.
The United States says it is at war in the Persian Gulf because Saddam Hussein conducted a brutal invasion of Kuwait that was in violation of international law, and that the United Nations set him a deadline of January the 15th to remove his troops from Kuwait. He did not obey that deadline, and that with the United Nations sanctions, the United States, at the head of a coalition, has decided to remove Saddam Hussein and his troops from Kuwait. What is your own analysis of why the U.S. is at war in the Persian Gulf?
In the first place, the United States of America cannot speak of going to attack anyone for annexing any state. America was founded on the annihilation of over 300 Indian nations in this country. They were totally annihilated after American capitalism had signed treaties with them. So for them to tell me whose country is based on genocide, that they're going to protect people, that's not serious. Unfortunately, the people in America, because the capitalist press, present company notwithstanding, because the capitalist press seeks to have the people react on instincts, you know, the Viet Cong's a communist, let's get him. Saddam Hussein is a monster, let's wipe him out. They think on these one lines, instinctive actuaries, they can go at it. But it's pathetic, the people in America, even those young men who are in Saudi Arabia today, getting ready to give their blood, they don't know what is Kuwait. They don't know what is Iraq. They don't know if Kuwait was part of Iraq, when it was. They don't know how it was taken away from Iraq. What were the conditions to bring it back? Why this process has taken so long? They don't know what is Zionism. They don't know what its role is in there. They don't know what the state of Israel. They know absolutely nothing except Saddam Hussein is a monster, and let's get him. So we can't take these things seriously. One thing we know, America's a greedy country. That's for sure. That's one thing we know. And America will do anything for greed. And it will send its young men to die for oil. That's clear.
So that is what you feel the reason is for the United States being in the Persian Gulf. Simple, straight up oil.
No, it's not what I believe. It's a fact. It's a fact. The only reason American priests, why are they not in Azania, South Africa, where racist pigs are shooting down our children every day, have taken our land, completely taken our land, disfranchised from our land on our own land? Why don't they attack the clerk? I mean, whom are they playing?
You mentioned those young men who are in the Persian Gulf and who may die. About 30% of the males are black, almost 50% of the females are black. And that poses a dilemma for many people who are against this war. On the one hand, black people have always fought courageously for America when asked to do so. On the other hand, there are a lot of black people in opposition to this war, and many of them have relatives. And because so many reservists have been called up, there are a lot of black fathers and mothers now in the Persian Gulf, and people have a lot of problems trying to distinguish between the policy and men and women who carry it out.
Well, I don't think so. You had the same problem in Vietnam. There are two sides to every war, just side, non-just side. Either you want America to win, or you want America to be defeated because she's incorrect. If she does, those who fight for America must also be defeated, that's clear. But we're going to see a lot of different things in this war in terms of resistance and protest movement. You know, they're just talking on television about their new tricks. We got a lot of new tricks for them. There's going to be a lot of desertion. A lot of Africans are going to desert. because they want to see what business are they, why are they fighting for, what are they fighting, why are they giving their blood in the sand? Why? We Africans have given our blood, as you have correctly pointed out, in more wars. We've given more of our blood out of proportion to our number than any other ethnic group in this country. And our blood is shed inside this country by racist pigs such as the CIA, the Ku Klux Klan, and the police more than any other ethnic group in this country. What are we fighting for?
Another dilemma that some people have is with the fact that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is a black man. And many of those people look with pride at the fact that groups such as the Tuskegee Airmen and others serve to integrate the armed forces, and that is to merely gain access to officers' clubs and the like, which they weren't allowed to. And they feel that Colin Powell has come about as a result of the efforts of those people. So on the one hand, they feel a certain pride at his accomplishment, and on the other hand, have some questions about his role in the war. What would you say to those people?
Well, this is unfortunate, because, again, they're not doing serious analysis, just going on the one-liners, you know. No African in this country has made individual advancement unless through the effort of mass struggle. And we've had no advancement without bloodshed in this mass struggle, whether it be violent or nonviolent protest. For example, just to sit in a filthy 5- and 10-cent store, we must shed our blood. To ride a bus, even though we pay like everybody else and sit where we want to sit, we must shed our blood. To get our children into schools where we pay taxes just like everybody else, we must shed our blood. Indeed, just to get the vote, which every immigrant gets once he puts his foot here, we must shed our blood. So we've made no advancement as a people, and no one listening to my voice now can show me one individual advancement we have made as a people without the shedding of our blood. Colin Powell didn't get there because he's a great soldier. He has to be. He's there simply because of the protests led by Dr. Martin Luther King to confuse us. That's the only reason Powell is occupying that seat, because of King. There's a contradiction. You cannot love King and love Powell. Even the Bible says you can't love God and the devil.
Let us move on. What would you have done, if you were in a position to do it, about Saddam Hussein's invasion of Kuwait?
I'd let him keep Kuwait.
Why?
I know the history of it. I know the history of it. It's just like Africa. Africa was divided at the Berlin Conference by European imperialists. The Middle East was divided by Europeans. They knew nothing about it. They went there to divide it for their own interest in their fights against each other. It was unjustly divided from Iraq.
If, in fact, Saddam Hussein kept Kuwait, do you think he would have posed any danger to the United States?
I don't see how. Except, of course, he would have reclaimed his oil. That's all.
And, of course, the president has said that we have to fight for the quality of our life, the implication being that were Saddam Hussein to control oil prices, the prices of gasoline and other uses for oil would go through the ceiling in the United States, and it would impair the quality of life, he says, not only in the United States, but in the entire world.
The president of the United States supports American imperialism. He, of course, his job was to be the armed guard of it. He was head CIA agent. He was top cop for America. So that's his line, but this is stupidity, clear, outright stupidity. Everywhere in the world where raw resources are being taken, the raw resources are taken out of the countries. The people there have nothing to say about the price of those raw resources. Bauxite is taken out of the island. The people who have bauxite, they cannot say anything about it in Jamaica. It's the bauxite companies in America who give the price for the low quality of the raw materials, come back, make manufactured products, and sell back the same product to the Jamaicans at higher prices. The Africans in Jamaica cannot tolerate this. This is everywhere around the world. So America wants to take the oil at a cheap price, it can sell it back after manufacturing high price, making profits everywhere. No, oil belongs to the people in the Middle East. It's their oil.
Some people may not understand what you mean when you discuss American imperialism. Could you describe for them what you're talking about?
It's very good. Imperialism is a system where a country goes to rape and exploit another country by taking out the resources of that country, making those resources come to the motherland, which they call the motherland, the exploiting country. That country there will now manufacture goods, sell back the same goods to the country at another price, at a higher price. Let me give you an example. When that great son of Africa, Kwame Nkrumah, was president of Ghana, you know cocoa was the base. The British used to take the cocoa out at a very low price, make chocolate, sell chocolate at high prices all over the world, even sell it back at Ghana at high prices, and there was nothing that they could do about it. So this is what imperialism is. It takes the resources out, it robs them, and it exploits the exploited and the labor of the people, getting them out and in high prices. Of course, the best example is Zania, South Africa, with our diamonds. It's our diamonds. We go into the ground, we die to pull those diamonds out. And when we pull them out, they go through Israel and then are sold in 42 Street on Brussels, everywhere else, and we get absolutely nothing. And it's our diamonds. Imperialism will be destroyed.
You also mentioned Zionism and said that some of our young people in the Persian Gulf may not understand the role that Zionism is playing in this conflict. Could you explain what you mean by that?
Unfortunately, they don't know what Zionism is, but Zionism is a political philosophy which has brought about the state of Israel, the so-called state of Israel. This political philosophy has nothing to do with religion. On the contrary, it seeks to confuse others and let them think that Zionism and Judaism is one and the same. I am a conscious African. I know properly my history. I know that Africa gave Judaism to the world. I know that the first Jews in the world were Africans. Not only do I know this, but I inform everyone who has doubts about it to read a book by Sigmund Freud entitled Moses and Monotheism as a Beginning. Consequently, I know that Judaism and Zionism are not the same. Zionism had its first organizational expressions in 1897 in Basel, Switzerland, in Europe. Here was a man by the name of Theodor Herzl, H-E-R-Z-L. He was the founder of Zionism. He said that he was going to find the state that God promised the Jews. Listen to this very carefully. This man, Herzl, was an atheist. He believed that there was no God. He said God did not exist. Now, how is it that a man who believes that God does not exist is going to find a state that God promised to his chosen people? I'm telling you, this man is Satan in disguise. Zionism is a satanic movement. It is devil. It is imperialism. It is racist. It has gone and taken the lands of the Palestinian people and through terrorism has driven them out. And through terrorism, it maintains its power. And the United States of America, with over 6 million homeless, sends to Israel billions and billions and billions of dollars everywhere to bomb Palestinian people while homeless people are here and unemployed are here. Zionism is going to raise this war and make the people in America become clear to what it is and become anti-Zionist and stop the aid to Israel and use the money to take care of the homeless in this country.
Every time that Kwame Ture has spoken in this area at the University of Maryland campus, there has been a protest by Jewish Americans who object to your views on Zionism. Are you anti-Jewish?
I cannot be anti-Jewish. Africa gave Judaism to the world. I am a conscious African. I am proud of Africa's contribution. As a matter of fact, I tell them who are not Jews, but in fact Zionists, that they ought to go and learn something from me because my people gave them the religion of Judaism, which is a proper religion.
Let's go to the telephone. Thank you for waiting, caller. You're on the air with Kwame Ture. Go ahead, please.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I have a question regarding the organization of the All African People's Revolutionary Party and whether or not it is recruiting people from the African community to be members of the party, or is it still based on the college campus? And if it's not in the community now, when will it be?
We are not, our efforts are directed towards the campus. Anyone who wants to join our party can. Our party's been organizing students for over 15 years, but students have never been the majority of our party. The majority of our party are those in the community. We are a revolutionary party. We're not a spontaneous party. We do not jump up today and fight this issue and sit down tomorrow. We're out to overthrow American imperialism. And we understand that the struggle of the ideas is crucial. That struggle which the 60s overlooked. And in spreading ideas, students have the skills. We understand. As Africa is our weakness, that the African bourgeoisie is the most corrupt in the world. And we understand that our students are more corrupt than them because they're trying to join them. But struggle must be waged. The battle must be joined. We are fighting not for the hearts of our people. We already have the hearts of our people. What we need are the minds of our people. And the minds must be sharpened. And here students have the skill to do this, to present the spark of the electoral struggle. Students spark revolution everywhere in the world. Our party is a revolutionary party, and we're seeking to spark that revolution.
Let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're up next. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good evening. How you doing, Coach Joe? Good evening, Kwame. How you doing? I would like to ask you three quick questions, and I'll make them very brief. Number one, would you discuss any significant Pan-African movement on the continent of Africa, and what your role what role do you play in those movements? Would you also talk about the transformation of Dr. King? And we've seen on this Eyes on the Prize, we saw you interviewed on Eyes for the Prize, and this transformation of Dr. King, I think we have a very distorted view of what Dr. King really was about. And finally, Would you speak a little bit about Myron Makeba, Mother of Africa? Thank
okay.
you, sir.
Thank you very much. Myriam Makeba, the transformation of Dr. King, and the first part of the question having to do with Pan-African movements on the continent of Africa and your role in them.
Well, you know, I live in Guinea, and I've been living in Africa since 1969, and I went there to work as a secretary for President Kwame Nkrumah, who at that time, with President Sekou Touré, was co-president of the People's Revolutionary Republic of Guinea. And I still work with the All African People's Revolutionary Party, and the objective of our party is Pan-Africanism, which is the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. Thus, in our efforts to organize the party, which is a Pan-African organization, I play here my full role. Dr. King was killed because he was an honest man, and this is why the FBI had to kill him. If you would look at Dr. King, you will see that Dr. King had a lot of courage. He could criticize himself publicly. If my memory serves me correctly, I think is in his speech, Why I Oppose the War in Vietnam, a speech incidentally, which is much better than this trivial speech they put on television every day of I Had a Dream. But then if you wait for television to bring you King, you will never learn anything about King. You need to get up and go to the library and read King for yourself. But if you would listen to the speech, Why I Oppose the War in Vietnam, if my memory serves me correctly, I think he precisely says, there is a time when caution can lead to cowardice. Of course, here King was speaking of himself. Clearly, that his caution on taking a stand against the Vietnam War would lead him to a position of being a coward. And he made it clear to all that he was not a coward. He was seriously cautious. And that any time he saw the truth, it would be his task to speak out against the truth. And you will see the transformation, because when King first started, he was for the federal government. He thought the federal government was his friend. As a matter of fact, as the chairperson of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, we had some slight conflict on this time and time again, because he saw the federal government as the friend of the Africans, and I know they were our pigs. Malcolm said that a long time ago. They're against us. There was no question here. But King himself came to see this. His last march was a poor people's march, and this march was against the federal government. So J. Edgar Hoover was not stupid. He understood this movement here was going to lead to more, and who knows, maybe King would have come to say, I've made a mistake. Nonviolence is not a principle. We should arrive at our liberation by any means necessary.
You were married to Myriam Makeba. You have never in your public life made a practice of discussing your personal life. I don't think you want to change at this point.
I don't think so anyway. I don't think people know me for who I'm married to. They know me for what I fight for. I fight for my people. But we thank the brother for the intention. Myriam Makeba is a beautiful sister who uses a talent to advance the struggles of the African masters, and all those who are artists must use their culture to inspire our people to struggle, not to make them forget about life so you can enjoy money.
Let's go back to the telephone. Caller, it's your turn. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Koja. I'm listening to your guests. I have a problem, like, which I don't know. I have a problem, like, when I compare him to Ronald Reagan. Like, you have a problem separating his policy from the rhetoric. I mean, he says he's anti-Zionist, anti-capitalism, but pro-black. But you don't have any basis or meat to what he's talking about. I think we have a... he's making a face on it, but I really do. You go out there, you rile people up.
Okay, well, let me try to get you to be more specific about the nature of your criticism or question. You say correctly
that it's very difficult to separate what exactly, when he says he's anti-Zionist, but he's not, he says he's anti-Zionist, but he's not anti-Jewish and other things like that. It is very difficult to separate what he actually stands for.
Okay, let's try to flesh this out. He did make it very clear about what he considers the difference between Zionism and Judaism, or what is the real difference between Zionism and Judaism. So let's go to capitalism. You said he says he is against capitalism and for blacks. You can't understand that.
No.
Okay, let me have him explain it.
But all our problem is capitalism. I mean, either we suffer in America because of white people or capitalism. Which one are you picking, brother?
Well, he seems to have left us, but let me attempt to speak for him. Because of the collapse of certain governments in Eastern Europe...
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that.
Because of the collapse of certain government in Eastern Europe,
I see.
The dialogue in the United States has less and less been a critique of the capitalist system. People assume that socialism doesn't work, proven that it doesn't work. If you're for blacks, how can you be against capitalism?
I see. Oh, my brother, you know, let me tell you something now. The capitalist system doesn't lie some of the time. It lies all of the time. And for the last year, it's been trumpeting a little tune about socialism has fallen, socialism has collapsed. This is nonsense. You never judge a system by its adherents. You do not judge Christianity by Christians. You judge no system by its believers. You judge it by its principles. If we were to judge Christianity by Christians, it should have been smashed millions of years ago, even before it came into Earth. Matter of fact, if you were to judge Christianity by Christians, then Christianity fell with Judas. But you don't judge Christianity by Christians. You don't judge socialism by socialists. You judge Christianity by its principles, irrespective of Christians. You judge socialism by its principles, irrespective of those who call themselves socialists. Where's the confusion? You think socialism has fallen? Don't go nowhere. It's coming right here to America because it's the only just economic system. There are only two economic systems in the world, capitalism and socialism. There can only be two because there's only one fundamental difference between them. Who owns the wealth of the country? Under a capitalist system, a few people own. Under a socialist people, all own. That's all.
So you do not accept the often popular view, certainly in the news media, that in the war between capitalism and socialism, capitalism has won.
You must be joking. We have not yet begun to fight. Are they for real? Their system is falling. And so what they want to do is to make it appear as if there's no other system except this one, and this is the best of all possible worlds. And even though you're oppressed in it, it's the only one, and you should accept it. Nonsense. Socialism is, the principles of socialism are more intact today than ever before. As a matter of fact, as a Pan-Africanist, I have never been led to follow the Eastern Bloc since the time of the great George Padmore. They should know something about their history. When Stalin went to fight, he told Padmore that he had to stop organizing Africans against European imperialism. Padmore told him no. Padmore was an African. He was born in Trinidad, as you well know. He was a colonel in the Red Army. He was an advisor to Stalin. He was their top organizer for the International Communist Party. And he turned around and left it all and told them, no, my people know only one imperialism here, French imperialism, British imperialism. These are what we're fighting against. And he left. Since then, no genuine Pan-Africanist, and that I am, has looked to the Soviet bloc neither for material nor immaterial aid. We are on our own 2 feet. We think for ourselves. Nobody thinks for us, and nobody can define socialism for us. It's a universal truth, just like the laws of gravity. All you have to do, investigate, you can find it. And Africans have been investigating science before Europeans came out of the caves.
George Padmore, who was previously known as Malcolm Nurse, was a member of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. When he withdrew from it, he was made a non-person. In the Soviet Union, he wrote a book. It's called Pan-Africanism or Communism, if you can get your hands on it. He was born in the same country as Kwame Ture, and that is Trinidad, West Indies. Let's go back to the telephone caller. It's your turn. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'd like to know what Kwame thinks about the meeting between Nelson Mandela and Buthelezi and what he thinks will come of it.
Thank you.
Well, I think it's a necessary meeting. We must understand here that there's not such a thing as African and African crime. Every crime has a purpose. Every crime has a purpose. And what they're calling crime is not crime. It's a political struggle. Throughout the African community worldwide, the class struggle has been intensifying, even though others have been trying to make believe it's not been. And in Tanzania, South Africa, we see this more clearly. It is clear, however, that the major enemy now is not the class structure inside the African community. The major enemy is the racist structure. We have to get our land back. We have to take political power. And those who hold political power is not Buthelezi, it is de Klerk and these racist pigs. Therefore, we must come and submerge our differences, make them non-antagonistic, and take on the major enemy. Thus, this meeting between Mandela and Buthelezi is most important to begin to bring harmony and to stop the antagonisms between the African masses as we join forces to take on the major enemy.
You mentioned earlier that the African leaders, and I presumed you were talking about around the world, are corrupt. Why do you think that situation has befallen us?
It is because, you know, our bourgeoisie is the most backward bourgeoisie because we are inundated with inferiority complexes. So our bourgeoisie, they feel inferior. For them, the hallmarks of being a bourgeoisie is to be able to drive a big car, be able to have a big house, fly where you want, that's all. But build factory and even exploit their people, this is beyond their wildest imagination. Thus, the African bourgeoisie in Africa, rather than figuring how to build a big factory there and exploit African workers to make money, that's out of their minds. All they want to do is be the representative of a big white multinational corporation and fly back and forth to Europe once in a while, and they're satisfied. So because of this, they have no national pride, and thus corruption can become easy because since they have no national pride, they can have no faith or confidence in the masses of the people. Therefore, they rely upon the corruption of this everywhere, not just in even many of those who are in the Democratic Party, etc.
Well, let's talk about them. The fact of the matter is that a lot of your old colleagues are now in that party and are now elected officials of that party. When you return to this country and you look around at what conclusions do you come to about the quality of leadership? And obviously, the only leadership is not elected leadership.
That's
there
clear.
Are different kinds
That's
of leadership.
That's not leadership anyway. That's not leadership at all. As a matter of fact, I've never beaten a woman in my life, and I couldn't beat a woman to make love to her. So I can't fight the Democratic Party to join it. Nor can I fight the capitalist system to come back to it. I fight it to overthrow it, and I'm going to stay on it till it's overthrown. So I can understand their movement. It is clear, however, that the Democratic Party and electoral politics do not solve our problems, at least until we are organized. So even if we were inside the Democratic Party, our functioning stalwarts in that party have a responsibility to at least organize the masses of our people. Because you cannot tell me that Kennedy and a sharecropper from Mississippi are in the same party with the same power because they got one vote each. That makes no sense at all.
I'm reminded that I should probably mention names when I say things like former colleagues. I'm talking about people like John Lewis, who was also a former chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, is now a member of Congress from the state of Georgia. Talking about John Wilson, who is the chairman of the District of Columbia City Council, another organizer for SNCC. Do you still maintain contact with your colleagues? Do you ever get a chance to see
them? Once in a while, if our paths cross, but I'm still doing the same thing they used to do. And I'm better at it.
But you are known to not make your political differences personal. When you run into old friends, many of whom have chosen electoral politics, a few have chosen, like H. Rab Brown, religion mm-hmm. as the major vehicle for expressing their consciousness, you still have cordial relations.
Of course, you know, there's no need to be antagonistic. Me, I never get mad unless I'm about to kill, and I don't get mad at anyone except someone who's truly exploiting my people, and for them, there's no problem here.
Let's go back to the telephone. Caller, it's you. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Kojo and Kwame Ture. During the Persian Gulf War, why has the news media conveniently overlooked the fact that 1 million Palestinians are under house arrest in the occupied territories in Israel?
Well, obviously, some media isn't overlooking it. Everybody who's watching this just heard it. Go ahead.
The press in America, of course, is controlled by Zionism. That's clear. And this is not a statement I make. There's a book by a Jewish man. And I think of the title of the book as we go along. And he's written the book. He's an anti-Zionist because there are Jews who are anti-Zionist. And for the man who called before and said he couldn't understand, I would suggest that he read Lenny Brenner's book, any of Lenny Brenner's book, who is a Jew who is anti-Zionist. And this man who's, I think...
He's even went on this show when my name, it's the name just gone.
Lenny Brenner, I'm sorry.
Okay, Lenny Brenner. Okay.
And the other book, I will think about it as we go along. I'll give it to him. But
okay.
The reason why is because the Zionists control the press. They control the press, and they don't let any information out that what they consider will make the people sympathetic to the cause of the Palestinians.
Saddam Hussein has called for linkage to his withdrawal from Kuwait to a Israeli withdrawal from the occupied territories. Do you think that is valid?
He's absolutely correct. This, again, is another hypocrisy of America. Here they are next to the land, they are occupying the land, and you talk that you're coming against annexation and you leave them there? Why? You know, George Bush, he talks like he's bad, like he's a CIA agent, but he's afraid of Israel. When they say jump, he says, how high?
You have mentioned that the United States in this war is on the wrong side. You have said they should have let Saddam Hussein keep Kuwait. But you must know that the American people have been hearing all kinds of things about Saddam Hussein, including the chemical warfare used against the Kurdish people in Iraq at the time, and it is felt that Saddam Hussein should not be associated with the cause of righteousness. How do you feel about that?
America cannot be the judge of moral righteousness for anybody. Don't you know the French have something they call faux discussion? That's a discussion that has no sense at all. If you're not careful, they will bring problems to you which are not yours, for you be discussing these problems that have no relevance at all. America cannot be moral judge of anyone. So anytime America speaks of morality, why pay attention? It's like if a thief is coming to give you lessons on how not to thief.
Let's go to the telephone. Caller, it's your turn. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
I honor you, Kwame Ture. There's a question I would like to ask. I don't know if you could throw some light on it. I understand that a few presidents now, including Ben Casey, and also Mr. Bush, has got a bank set up in Panama and are still sending all of the materials to South Africa that is supposed to be cut off at the moment. Could you throw some light on that if you're familiar with it?
That they're violating the sanctions.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with these facts, but that's nothing new. I mean, there's nothing that America can do in relationship to holding up racist and dictatorial regimes throughout the world that should surprise anyone. Nothing at all, especially when it comes to Zania, South Africa. First, America is racist. She's capitalist. A racist capitalist system will do everything possible to maintain the predominance of a racist settler colonial system.
You mentioned that this money that is being used to assist Israel should be brought back home and used to assist the homeless. When you left this country more than 20 years ago to reside in West Africa, the homeless population of this country was minuscule compared to what it is today. Is that something that strikes you every time you step off a plane in Miami, New York, or whenever you return to this country, the vast difference in that situation?
There's no question. Anyone who spends any time outside of America, anytime you come back, you can see the rapid decline. You know, it's just a scientific phenomena that as a body rolls downward, it picks up mass and volume and momentum and speed, et cetera, et cetera. So that there's no question you can see the decline coming more and more. I have always been against American imperialism. As a matter of fact, when people ask me my position on the war in the Gulf, I tell them that if I were the Imam of Mecca and American imperialism was fighting the devil, as Africa is my mother, I would be Satan's comrade in arms. Anywhere America is, I'm against it. But if you would have told me in the 1960s that America would decline to the position she is now, I myself would not have believed it. So it's this declination, this decline, which makes it clear America's on a way down, she can be destroyed, and she will be destroyed.
A recent survey conducted by the University of Chicago found that in spite of the fact that we mentioned earlier that blacks have died disproportionately in armed service to this country, that a majority of white Americans believe that blacks are less patriotic than they are.
They cannot believe that. Nobody loves America like these stupid Africans. They cannot believe that. Come on.
They say that. And I think
they're talking on. They can't believe that. My brother, if you go out there and even try and tell them to go to the war, they want to fight you. Nobody loves America like these Africans here. Well, we ain't got no other home. What's Africa? I ain't got nothing to do with Africa. I don't know. All they know is America. All they know is America. They've let America just tie them in. Why, they love everything about America. Well, this white man is tall. He knows better.
However, they are often critical of America's domestic policies. They're critical of the impoverishment and unemployment they see in the black community. And it is my own belief that many whites interpret that as somehow being unpatriotic. It's not the kind of love it or leave it kind of rhetoric that they would expect to be coming from people who are patriotic. How do you mesh this criticism of America's internal policies with what you describe as an enthusiasm for America, especially in its external adventures?
This is the contradiction that we face as a people, that we love America more than any other people in America, and we are more abused by America than any other people in America. This is the contradiction, and this contradiction has been coming more and more. In the Vietnam War, some of it came out, but in this war, all of it will come out. And this is a war without, this war is gonna be no hands drawn, you know. Bush is going to do everything as head of the CIA. He will even plant explosives throughout the country and say that terrorists are doing it to scare the people and make them go into the job. You know, that's an old Zionist trick, and you know, at least you can learn from Mossad if you can't learn
from
CIA.
You think it's going to be a long war?
Well, one thing is clear. With the sand going on and the storm coming up and the hot pressure getting hot, this war is going to be a long war. And Saddam Hussein said he prepared for a long war. America prepared for a short war, but he prepared for a long war.
Let's go back to the telephone caller. It's your turn. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Mr. Kwame Ture. I have two brief questions. Do you believe that Malcolm X was right in saying that we should live apart from the white man? And could you shed some light on, I don't celebrate the 4th of July, okay? Could you shed some light on that situation? Because I have a friend that I'm trying to explain it to, but your eyes can see further than mine. And could you please help him out?
All right, let me take your last question first. On the 4th of July, my brother, I would suggest that you go and get a speech by Frederick Douglass, which he made on the 4th of July. And just read that speech, let your brother, because it won't be me, it'll be Frederick Douglass, you know, and he's not like me, you know, he was good, he wanted to be ambassador of America. I could never do that, you know. So he's a good, you let him read that speech by Frederick Douglass on what the 4th of July means to the Africans in America. And then your first question, which was... Is that how you do it?
Malcolm X.
Yes. Yes. You must be careful now. You know, Malcolm X was very, very, very sharp. Malcolm was very sharp. I remember that a policeman had killed someone in New York when Malcolm was head. They just formed the Organization of African American Unity. And when he just formed this organization, his leaflet, his people began to leaflet, and they put out that a policeman had murdered someone. And Malcolm, they called Malcolm in Africa and told Malcolm. Malcolm said, no, take out the word murdered. It's a legal term. Put the word killed. Malcolm, they put the word killed. The NAACP and the Congress Racial Equality kept the word murder in. And when the cop got off, he sued SNCC, sued CORE, and he sued the NAACP, but couldn't sue Malcolm. So Malcolm was very, very, very intelligent. And Malcolm used to say that, they say I'm a separatist. He said, but I'm not a separatist. He said, it depends upon how you use words. He said, for example, America separated from Britain in 1776. They didn't call it an act of separation. They called it an act of independence. He said, so all I'm calling for is independence of Africans all over the world. Malcolm is correct. We must have our independence where we depend upon no one but ourselves.
You are saying it is not important whom we live next door to, but what we control.
That's all. And when we control what we control, be no problem. We always say all the time, racism is not an attitude. It's a question of power. If a white man wants to lynch me, that's his problem. If he has power to lynch me, that's my problem.
Indeed, that is a discussion that has been going on a lot recently. Congressman Gus Savage has said that it is impossible, in his view, for a black man to be a racist.
No power.
And he never explained it. Maybe you can.
There's no power. There's no power. To be a racist, you must have power. That's why I laugh at them.
You can have prejudice, but if it has no power involved, then you can't be a racist.
How can you be? I said the white man, he can want to lynch me. If he can't lynch me, he can do whatever he wants to do. But if he has the power to lynch me, that's my problem.
Let's go back to the telephone. Caller, it's your turn. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, I like to make I got two statements I'd like to make. First of all, the brother that's next to you, he's very intelligent. He's very sharp. Okay, the first statement I would like to say is that the Bush administration, okay, when it comes to negotiations with Saddam Hussein over the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, it seems like there's no room for it. I mean, he won't even meet him halfway. So I'm trying to figure out why not, you know, because the Palestinians, that was their land long before we all know.
Okay.
Those are European Jews that are not really Jews anyway.
Okay, and what's your other statement?
Huh?
You said you had another statement?
Yeah, okay. The other statement was you got a lot of black men and women over in the Persian Gulf that's willing to lay their life down for this country. But yet, a few months ago, Bush vetoed the Civil Rights Bill. Now, only thing I'm saying is going to sound kind of crazy, but this is my philosophy because I'm kind of like a militant. And I want to hear the brother's comment on this. Okay, if they all just say, hey, we're not fighting, and say, the hell with it. That will give the Bush administration and let them see how serious we are, because this is a slap in the face to us. I mean, these guys are ready to lay down their life and die for this shit, this stinking country. Yet he's going to veto the Civil Rights Bill, and then just recently he turned around and...
Okay, gotcha. We understand your sentiment fairly accurately.
Is Claire, my brother, again, the error they're being made is that they think that we're stupid and we don't remember anything. So they think that we're stupid, but what's going to happen is that the conscience is going to rise, because this is a voluntary army. It's not a draft. And once they try back the draft, they'll be stopped. There's no question about that. As this is a voluntary army, we know that it's not a voluntary army. Those brothers and sisters who are in there got no choice. They got to go in there. That's clear. So those brothers and sisters themselves are going to be the first ones who are going to have to question what they're doing there, why they're doing there. And if you go back to the history of the Vietnam War, you will see many Africans had much clash with white troops inside the U.S. Army, inside Vietnam. And that's one of the reasons why that war had to come quickly to a screeching halt. This process will develop quickly in the beginning of this war. So those problems will develop. Our job now is to begin to tell all other brothers and sisters, when they start sucking up them into the army, that we're not going. And not only are we not going, but we're going to bring war to the streets of America.
You do remember that after the First World War, returning veterans found conditions in black communities so horrible that they rioted.
Every war.
At the time.
Every war. World War I, the same thing in World War II, and the Vietnam War was cleared, because at least we didn't wait for them to come back. We did it while they were there.
And when these young men come back, they will be coming back to a country plagued by recession and other problems, which, of course, will be intensified in the black community. What do you think their response is going to be?
Well, we know what their response is going to be. We've said that there is, you know, people think that history repeats itself, but their response will be, the resistance will be more qualified than it was in the 60s. In the 60s, they ended with burning the flag. This time, they start with burning the flag.
Let's go back to the telephone. Caller, it's your turn. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I wanted to address my question to your guest. I was a freedom rider and spent some time in the Mississippi State Penitentiary at Parchman at the time that SNCC was in its heyday. One of the questions that was, or issues that was raised by Stokely Carmichael, as he was then called, was that the only place for women in SNCC was prone. I just wonder if over these years that he has now grown up,
what's your name?
He has another attitude about women.
What's your name?
My name is Shirley Smith.
Shirley Smith. Well, Shirley Smith, I don't know who you are, but if you know anything about that statement, do you think that you judge a person on a phrase about a statement as powerful as a woman's movement?
Oh, no. I just wanted to know.
I'm asking, but that's what you did.
I see
why didn't you go and read?
A change in your attitude about a lot of things, and I just would like to know where you are in your attitude toward women.
Well, I'm giving you one. Why don't you go and read the dedication to the book Black Power? Did you ever read that one?
No.
Well, why don't you read that one? That phrase will tell you. That comment has never been made publicly. Can you show it to me where it's written or where I've publicly stated it? Can you show it to me? Can you show me my writing?
The issue of where your attitude toward women.
No. We're talking about the statement you made. That's precise. Let us be precise. Do you have anywhere in any book I have written, any speech I have made, any public statement where that statement can be found? Or has it been told to you by others? That's the first question I ask you.
No, it has been told to me by others who heard you make the statement.
Right. Good. So that means that if the statement was made, it was made only once and it was heard by a few, not a public statement. So even if I were not a revolutionary, I could deny it. I made the statement. The statement was made as a joke. Of course, you, if you say you were part of SNCC, would understand that in any organization, jokes can sometimes be brutal, even in war. If you go to war, the jokes that soldiers make, if you're not a soldier, can make you feel bad. And if you're an African, the jokes we tell about ourselves, if you're not African, try to make it, will get you. So that was a closed joke inside of SNCC, and only SNCC people could understand it. And if you could understand it, you would know it, because African men can oppress their women everywhere. But the one place we cannot oppress our women is on the front lines fighting for our struggle. If you look at the history of Africa, everywhere you will see women on the front lines, from Nzinga all the way down to Fannie Lou Hamer to Assata Shaku. Women are always on the front lines. So this statement could only be a statement, obviously, not made for African women, made maybe for some other women. And if made for African women, obviously it had double-edged humor, because women are always on the front lines in our struggle, even though we oppress them everywhere. I don't know for other cultures. I just speak of my own.
Are statements that you are alleged to have made privately, because you're a public figure, followed you throughout these past 22 years?
This statement was picked up by the white women in SNCC who were put out of SNCC when I was chairperson, and then picked up by the FBI. So since that's all they got, let them have it, you know.
Let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're up next. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Go right ahead, please. Hello?
Hello, go right ahead.
Yes, I'd like to see Brother Kwame Ture in a session with Juan Williams. But I wanted to ask Kwame Ture to please comment further on the fact that General Colin Powell stated that the military is an excellent way for blacks to advance, and he used himself as an example. Thank you.
Okay, let me say that Kwame Ture may not even be aware of who Juan Williams is. Juan Williams is a reporter for the Washington Post, who has taken civil rights leaders and black elected officials to task in many of his articles. I don't know if you want to deal with him, but let's talk about Colin Powell.
Well, anyway, I just figure that any African who gets a position on the journey, what does he write for?
The Washington Post.
On the Washington Post, ought to know the only reason they're there is like Colin Powell, because of the blood of the mass of their people, and that position is not for them, it's for the people, and should be used not to criticize the people, but to criticize the system which their people have been fighting to put them in their position. If they don't understand that, then really they betray the struggles and the blood of their people.
Colin Powell has said that the military is an excellent way for a black person to advance.
I cannot see how anyone can tell me that the best way for one to advance is by being a hired killer. Even I don't see why we have ROTC on campus. We fought to put it off. You mean to tell me the only way we can advance is by being killers, and killers of the enemies of American imperialism? Because who do we kill? We don't kill our enemies. Do we go to Azania, South Africa, and kill de Klerk? Do we kill the Ku Klux Klan? Do we kill racist policemen? No, we kill Arabs who ain't doing nothing against us. We don't even know them. They've never done anything against us. So, it is clear here that Mr. Powell is a liar, Mr. Powell is a traitor to his people, and Mr. Powell is a traitor to humanity, and Mr. Powell accepts that position. That position was made again, and don't you ever forget it, because of Dr. Martin Luther King. If you love King, you can never love Powell.
If you were in a position to advise someone who had attained the position of general in the U.S. Army and was offered the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, what would you have said?
Blow it up.
The Pentagon?
Blow it up.
Obviously, Kwame Ture has not changed in very many respects.
I have changed, please. I'm more knowledgeable. are more experienced and are more determined to destroy American imperialism.
He is no more diplomatic than he has ever been. However, he has always been known to speak his mind and to speak his mind openly and clearly. That is what he is doing tonight. Let's go back to the telephone. Caller, it's you. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello. My name is Calvin Ruffin, too. I like to tell Mr. Ture that he is an incredible inspiration to me. He is the epitome of what we should all be aspiring to be. Okay, now, I'm a young, aspiring black filmmaker, and I like to just ask him, what should I be prepared to deal with as far as racial blockades, et cetera? Okay, my sister Zodi Tuin and Zinger are watching, so we're kind of happy to even have a chance to listen to him. So that's it.
Okay, you're a filmmaker.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, you must understand that if you're a filmmaker, none of your films, if they're serious, will be put on television. That's the first thing.
What do you think about Spike Lee, by the way?
Oh, I think he's just a filmmaker who makes money. That's all. He tries, but you know, if you want to give a message to the people, then you have to be serious. You have to do some serious study, understand some things. It's not spontaneous. And what happens is you end up doing worse things. In fact, when the films are properly analyzed, then you do with good things. You know, if you want your films to get on Hollywood, you can't give a line for the people. That's clear. You can't help your people and make money too. Not in the film. So if you're a real filmmaker, at this point in history, your films will not be popular. They will not be on the mass television, but the conscious element of your people will appreciate it. You will give inspiration to them and push others forward. But if you're looking for popularity in this country, you will never get it by being honest or righteous or supporting just causes.
Spontaneity is one of the mistakes we all made as young activists. Would you say that you would advise not only this young filmmaker, but other young activists to A, avoid being spontaneous, and to understand their history?
They must avoid it. That's the era that we spoke about of with all the best of intentions that Spike Lee has. Spontaneity will not adjust any cause. We need serious scientific organization and clear analysis of the obstacles in our path.
Okay, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, it's you. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Ture, this is J.J. Johnson. I don't know if you remember me, but I first met you down at Jackson State. I have two quick questions. First question I have to mention, in your the book you co-wrote, Black Power, you spoke on the colonialization that we as African Americans are going through. I wish you would comment on that. And second of all, how do you feel about the misrepresentation of the statements that you made, I would say back in the 60s, about the Black Power and the Black Panther political party and things like that, and how the media has changed that all around and turned it so negative? Please comment. Thank you.
All right, on your second question, remember the first one for me.
I'm trying.
Thank you. On the second question about the press media, the capitalist press, of course, is an arm of the capitalist system, and it must preserve the system. Therefore, it needs reformists, and reformists need the capitalist press. But I'm not a reformist. I'm a revolutionary. And, of course, when I first entered serious struggle in Mississippi, there we couldn't use the press. The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee could not use the press. Dr. King's organizations, they used the press because they were involved in mobilization. We were involved in serious organization. If the press man knew who we were, we would be killed, assassinated by the terrorist groups. So press was not an arm for us. I understand that the press is supposed to destroy any program that is trying to help bring our people together, other than a reform program which paints America, makes her look nice, and keeps our people inside of her, politically speaking. So we don't expect anything from the press, and when we come in contact with it, we fight it to use it. And of course, when it comes in contact with us, it tries its best to destroy us. So we understand the nature of the struggle here. And since we're not reformists, we're in total struggle with the American capitalist press. Your first question.
Are black people in America a colonized people?
There's no question about it that we're a colonized people. Not only are we that, as a matter of fact, in the 60s, when we wrote that book, and the book is being republished, and I've just looked at it, I still hold to the thesis of the book, that we didn't even have neocolonial structures. But today we even have neocolonial structures to show how really colonial we are. We have bantustans everywhere with neocolonial puppets. We have mayors who have no power. As a matter of fact, some of our mayors are fighting harder for Israel than they are for Azania, South Africa. This man, this governor here, they're so proud about, this one who made the Higgins one. Where is he now? In Israel. Where's Dinkins in New York? In Israel. What do they do for Azania, South Africa? Nothing.
Okay, let's go back to the telephone caller. It's your turn. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Good evening, Kwame and Kojo. Kwame.
It's kind of late for you. Try to make it brief.
Yeah, I just realized we're all out of time. There's been this argument with respect to nationalism and socialism, one or the other, or both in combination. Can you give me a brief speech as to, you know, whether or not you see a dichotomy, a dilemma, or what the story is there?
How much time do we have to answer this question?
About 2 minutes.
All right. I'm sorry, we don't have time, but let me tell you. According to Marxism-Leninism, they see nationalism as basically negative. Sekou Touré, that great son of Africa, correctly pointed out that when you go from a nation to a state, as was in the case of Europe, nationalism is dominantly negative. But when you go from a state to a nation, as in the case of Africa, Asia, the Caribbean, South and Central America, the colonized world, nationalism is a plus. We must understand the laws of dialectics. The first thing that Karl Marx teaches us about the law of dialectics is that everything is positive and negative at the same time, and in certain conditions, the negative can be dominant or the positive can be dominant, but something is never stagnant or all negative. Anytime someone tells you that nationalism is always negative and dominantly negative at all times, they know nothing of dialectics. We have definitely shown, and you will see for yourself, all the struggles since the second imperialist war, what they call World War II, which have battered imperialism, have all fought under national liberation struggles, all of them.
One of the better known speeches of yours as Stokely Carmichael was your Free Huey speech back in 1968. How must you have felt when you heard of the death of Huey Newton? After all, you had been made an honorary leader of the Black Panther Party, and then you hear, while presumably in Conakry, that Huey Newton is dead, shot to death in a dispute with a drug dealer.
No, Huey Newton was killed by the police. There's no question here. Huey Newton was killed by the police. There's no question here. And anyone who thinks differently is just not thinking and know nothing about politics and nothing of struggle in this country. When Huey Newton was charged with the killing of that policeman, in every police chapter in this country, there are found racist organizations like the Aryan Brotherhood, the Ku Klux Klan. It makes sense. If you're a racist, be a policeman. You can shoot him. Justifiable homicide. You ain't got nothing to worry about. And the police told us then that if it takes them 25 years, they're going to kill Huey Newton. They told us that. They killed Huey Newton. The police killed Huey Newton. Nobody else killed him except the police.
Okay, we have time for one more telephone call. We have about 1 minute left. Caller, please make it quick. Hello?
What role does culture play in the liberation of black people? And is it time for black people to make their exodus to the continent?
Thank you.
Culture plays a crucial role. And unless we understand it, we get confused. Let me give you an example. Since the 70s, they were talking about gay and lesbian liberation. And people come to us in our All African People's Revolutionary Party all the time and say, you know, we have this problem. This is not our problem. This is not our problem. And some say you're a macho. We tell them, get out of here. In the white community, homosexuality is not accepted. They're intolerant. They bash in their brains. But I've been all over the African world. And I've never seen anybody bash in the brain of any homosexual in the African world. We are not intolerant of homosexualities. Therefore, this is not a problem in our culture. It is a problem for European culture. We should not let other cultures impose their problems upon us. Therefore, culture is extremely important. Your ideology comes from your culture. That's why we are Nkrumah's Touréist. In 2 minutes.
And that's why he is who he is, Kwame Touré. Thank you all for joining us. Have a pleasant evening. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks.